Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, February 22nd. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Perryman, Midland County will serve as center of activity through at least 2050, by Mella McEwen. Editor's note, Ray Perryman's column will run in Thursday's edition. For decades, multiple projections have forecast the world had reached peak oil production. Those forecasts spread to the Permian Basin and down further to Midland County. Instead, notes economist Ray Perryman, production has defied expectations, with production from both the Permian Basin and Midland County already at record highs. Midland County has dominated the state as the top oil-producing county in Texas, yielding 15.24 million barrels in November, the most recent month available. Despite massive gains in production, output in Midland County is currently 20 times higher than it was in 2009. Perryman notes oil reserves in the Permian Basin are more than 5 times higher, with natural gas reserve more than 6 times higher than previous levels. Astonishingly, shale gas reserves are more than 8,000 times higher than they were prior to the deployment of modern drilling methods, he notes. This pattern of increasing reserves shows no signs of dissipating. The Railroad Commission showed Midland County was responsible for 14.6% of the state's 104.364 million barrels in November, and was third in the state in natural gas production at 55.251 billion cubic feet. Perryman pointed out that Midland County production is more widespread, with the county serving as a center of the related activity that captures about 34% of the regional gross production associated with the energy sector and 36% of overall activity. Perryman repeated that trend shows no sign of dissipating, offering a long-term forecast that Midland County will continue to serve as a center of related activity at least through 2050. Thus, Midland will reap substantial benefits from oil and gas production throughout the region, Perryman concluded. Technical progress and global markets all suggest Midland County and the Permian Basin will be vital in meeting critical energy needs for decades, he said, giving lie to the many forecasts of peak production. Simply extrapolating the present rarely predicts the future, Perryman said. This article is entitled P&Z Commission Approves Plat for Townhomes Project. Commission also approves alcohol permit for Little Bohemian in downtown Midland, by Mella McEwen. A new townhome project in southwest Midland advanced Tuesday upon approval of a proposed plat. Maverick Engineering had received approval of its zone change request from MF16, Multifamily Dwelling District, to TH, Townhouse District, at the previous Planning and Zoning Commission hearing. Tuesday, commissioners unanimously approved a preliminary plat of 4.73 acres at the east of Beale Parkway and south of Blue Haven Drive. The applicant plans to split the acreage into 40 individual lots and construct a private road, which consists of a 50-foot circular right-of-way around the townhomes. Commissioners also unanimously approved a request by Caitlin Carrasco for a specific use designation with term for the sale of all alcoholic beverages for on-premises consumption in a restaurant. Carrasco is in the process of opening Little Bohemian at 201 West Wall Street in the former Lost Books location. Because of the new ownership and change in business hours, she was required to amend the existing SUD. Little Bohemian is currently under construction and will have a total square footage of 1,988 square feet, with an alcohol serviceable area of 988 square feet. Proposed hours of operation are Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 2 a.m. the next day, with the same hours for alcohol service. Because it was not part of a public hearing, commissioners did not hear public comments about a proposed preliminary plat of three lots in blocks 5 and 6 in Westridge Park, submitted by Parkhill. The lots at the southwest corner of the intersection of Deauville Boulevard and Loop 250 Frontage Road are being platted for future commercial development. Commissioners unanimously approved the proposed preliminary plat. This article is entitled, Council Works Through Communication, Personality Issues. Governance is finding solutions. Politics is playing to people's emotions. By Lyle Sumek. This article is written by Stuart Doreen. The Midland City Council opened up about communication and personality problems with a facilitator on Tuesday during a workshop at the Bush Convention Center. The City of Midland brought back Lyle Sumek to walk the seven council members through conversations about what they want for the City of Midland, their relationships with each other, and what could be done to rid city leaders of drama issues that have taken place over the first 7 weeks of this council's tenure. Sumek reminded city council members right away that the workshop Tuesday was to be about where the council is right now and where its members want to go, not relitigating the past. He said the success of the body will come during governing, while those interested in individual accomplishments are worried more about politics. Little successes are required to build the trust back up, Sumek told city leaders. Success is taking incremental steps. Sumek didn't mince words that this council, which has shown fractures during the Hogan Park Conservancy debate and during conversations over water issues, had work to do Tuesday and beyond. He also reminded council members that city business could be negatively impacted by the conflict, as businesses looking at Midland will stay away, and ratings agencies could lose confidence in the city if the tone set is a problematic one. Governance is finding solutions, Sumek said. Politics is playing to people's emotions. The council members provided their thoughts about what success meant and the standard regarding interaction with each other and the community. They came up with a code of conduct and expectations for the mayor, other council members, and the city manager. Among the possible solutions included the use of more briefing sessions, workshops where larger programs could be brought before city leaders to discuss before the issues are put on a council agenda. City leaders also discussed the spread of information from city staff that benefits all council members. Problems identified were council members operating in silos, the lack of trust some members had for each other, interpersonal conflicts, and the need to act in a professional manner. I am encouraged after a day spent with our council and senior city staff at our council retreat, Midland Mayor Lori Blong said in a statement. Lyle Sumek capably led us through a discussion of healthy governance as a team, and we came together on some of the concerns we have faced as a group. High-performance teams depend on team unity, and we made steps forward toward that unity today. Looking forward to great days ahead for the City of Midland. The next city workshop is expected to take place in March. At that time, council members are expected to meet with city staff to discuss city governance, management, operations, policies, protocols, strategic planning, and priorities. Issues discussed could be related to streets, roads and water and sewer infrastructure, water supply and resources parks and recreation community services, public health and safety, land use and development, economic development, personnel, airports, technology, solid waste management, real property acquisition and disposition, and oil and gas development and regulation. This article is entitled Midland ISD Goes to Odessa for Next General Council by Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD again plucked talent from Ector County ISD to fill the hierarchy of new Superintendent Stephanie Howard. The Midland ISD School Board on Monday, during its regular meeting, approved the hiring of Chad Krausen as the district's next general counsel. Krausen served as the Executive Director of Choice Programs, Access, and Support. Previous ECISD leaders making the move to Midland include Jesse Garcia as the Executive Director of Talent Acquisition and Development, Robert Cedillo as the Deputy Superintendent, and Ashley Osborne as Associate Superintendent for Teaching and Learning. Krausen is a former principal at Spring Branch ISD, was an assistant principal at Klein ISD, and held several positions, including as an assistant principal at LaPorte ISD, according to the district. Krausen received his law degree from the University of Houston, and he spent several years in private practice in the general Houston area. He earned his bachelor's in political science and government from the University of Texas at Austin, and his master's in educational leadership and administration from Lamar University. Krausen replaces Sid Pounds, who left the district in January after spending less than 3 years with Midland ISD. Previous general counsels included Matthew Powell, Leah Robertson, and Ellen House. The general counsel is slated to earn between $151,001 and $230,218, according to Midland ISD's compensation manual. This article is entitled, Hiker Dies After Experiencing Chest Pains at Big Bend National Park, by Mercedes Cordero. A 56-year-old man died Saturday after experiencing chest pains while hiking at Big Bend National Park, according to park officials. Big Bend National Park's Communications Center received a call Saturday at about 1:15 p.m. requesting emergency assistance on the Pinnacles Trail. The 56-year-old man, who was hiking with a scout troop, began experiencing chest pains. Friends hiking with the visitor immediately began CPR and continued with the help of bystanders and park volunteers until rangers arrived on the scene with an AED, according to park officials. All attempts to revive him were unsuccessful. Big Bend National Park staff and partners are saddened by this loss, stated Acting Deputy Superintendent Rick Gupman. Our entire park family extends condolences to the hiker's family and friends. This article is entitled, INEOS Eyes More U.S. Growth After Chesapeake Shale Oil Purchase, by Mitchell Furman, Bloomberg. INEOS, the chemical giant built by one of Britain's richest men, Jim Ratcliffe, wants to expand its U.S. onshore energy business after making its first major foray into American shale. U.S. energy production is very attractive, INEOS Energy Chairman Brian Gilvary said in an interview on Tuesday. His remarks came after Chesapeake announced it had agreed to sell some South Texas shale assets to INEOS for $1.4 billion. INEOS already has an extensive petrochemical footprint in Houston and other parts of the U.S. Gulf Coast. Although the Chesapeake deal marks the company's entree into U.S. shale, INEOS has long sought to exploit shale deposits in its home country, ambitions that ultimately were frustrated by a government moratorium on fracking. This is a first great step for our Lower 48 onshore business, said Gilvary, a former BP PLC finance chief. We're not going to go chasing deals. We'll wait for ones to come across at the right time. INEOS sees the U.S. as the ideal place to do it because of the country's stable fiscal regime, Gilvary said. Recent federal legislation in the U.S. has led to a carbon capture gold rush that the company expects will be part of our portfolio going forward. Despite the global pivot away from fossil fuels, Gilvary said oil will be crucial over the next two decades. The deal with Chesapeake, which is expected to close during the second quarter, involves drilling rights to 172,000 acres and about 2,300 active wells in the Eagle Ford Shale, the company said. The acquisition also comes as Ratcliffe and INEOS bid for majority ownership of Manchester United PLC, the soccer club valued at about $6 billion. This article is entitled Legacy Principle to Lead School Leadership at Midland ISD by Stuart Doreen. Legacy High School Principal Shannon Torres will be Midland ISD's next Executive Director of School Leadership. The MISD Board approved the promotion Monday at its regular monthly board meeting. Midland ISD reported that Torres will finish out the school year as principal before fully transitioning into her new role. Torres was named Principal of the Year for Region 18 by the Texas Association of Secondary School Principals. After starting her education career in Amarillo, she came to Midland in 2013 and served as an assistant principal at Midland High School and principal at Midland Freshman before she was named Legacy Principal in 2020. The pay range for executive directors is between $99,824 and $152,191, according to the Midland ISD Administrative Professional Pay Plan. This article is entitled, Fixing Beat-Up Power Grids Will Cost U.S. Utilities a Record $160 Billion This Year, by Mark Chediak, Bloomberg. U.S. utilities are expected to spend almost $160 billion this year, the most ever, to green and fortify power grids that have been battered by a string of extreme weather events. Nearly half of that spending will be to make transmission and distribution systems more resilient to storms, while also accommodating greater amounts of clean power. Executives with the Edison Electric Institute, the nation's main utility trade group, said during an investor briefing on Tuesday. The announcement comes 2 years after a severe winter storm crippled the Texas power grid, resulting in days of widespread blackouts and more than 200 deaths. Another deep freeze in December triggered rotating blackouts in the U.S. Southeast, where more than 1 million homes and businesses lost power. The record capital spending will help boost profits for investor-owned utilities because they can earn a regulated, guaranteed return on those infrastructure investments. Utilities also stand to be big beneficiaries of President Joe Biden's climate bill, which includes nearly $272 billion in clean energy tax benefits, the utility trade group said. This is the obituary column. Wednesday, February 22nd. Claude Thomas Tom Aylesworth, Jr. Claude Thomas Tom Aylesworth, Jr. passed away February 12th at the age of 86. Tom was born on November 6, 1936, in Plainview, Texas, to Claude Thomas Aylesworth Sr. and Clara Lee Brim Aylesworth. He is survived by his daughter, Jo Lee Aylesworth, and husband, Tim Smith, his son, John, and wife, Tammy Aylesworth, his daughter, Jamie, and husband, Louis West, and by Tom's stepson, Kevin Stone. He also left behind five grandchildren. There will be a celebration of life on a date to be determined. To honor Tom's memory, the family suggests donations to St. Jude's Children's Hospital or the Wounded Warrior Project. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home. Marjorie Nell Kasparis. December 6, 1928 to February 17, 2023. She was the youngest of seven siblings and only daughter, raised on what could be best described as a sharecropper's ranch near Rocky Point, Texas, just north of Stephenville. Perhaps her greatest jewels rested with her grandchildren, Cassie and Sandra by birth, and Paul, Adam, and Caleb by marriage. All held a specially reserved place in her heart. Visitation will be from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday, February 25th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Funeral services will be held at 1 p.m. Saturday, February 25th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home with Dr. Byron McWilliams officiating. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. To send condolences to the family, please sign her guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Marlo Wall. Marlo, at the age of 42, received his promotion to heaven on February 15th. He was born and raised in Midland and graduated from Midland Christian School in 1999. Marlo is survived by his wife, Kelly Marie Smith Wall, his son, Gavin Lee Wall, and daughter, Ruby June Wall, his mother, Maureen Dotson Lewis, and stepfather, David Lewis, his only surviving grandparent, grandmother June Dotson, biological father, J.K. Rusty Wall, and his wife, Iris Wall, a brother, Toby Markham Wall, and his wife, Kate Hartwig Wall, and his former spouse, Amanda Wall Simmons. He was preceded in death by his paternal grandparents, Jack and Ruth Wall, maternal grandfather, Fred Dotson, and his great-grandparents, Jack and Molly Dotson, and Roy and Maureen White. In lieu of flowers, please make a charitable donation to your favorite charity. Memorial service will be held at 11:30 a.m. Saturday, February 25th at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Martha Bowen, March 30, 1929 to February 19, 2023. Martha Mae Hanks Bowen passed away on Sunday, February 19th at the home of her nephew, David Rhodes, in Midland. Her beloved husband, Donald J. Bowen, Brigadier General USAF, retired. Her son, Larry Lee Duane Gluck, and great-grandson, Lucas Duane Gluck, preceded her in death. Also her parents, Sam and Savannah Hanks, two brothers, Gene Hanks and S.R. Dick Hanks, and sister Dorcas Rhodes, preceded her in death. Martha began her life on the family farm in Nolan, Texas, on March 30, 1929. She also leaves behind three grandchildren and one great-grandchild, and also two sisters, Joey Bray and husband Keith of Collier, Kansas, and Dodie Gibbs of Midland, Texas. Funeral service will be on Friday, February 24th at 2 p.m., following visitation from noon to 2 p.m., held in Sweetwater, Texas, at the McCoy Chapel of Memories, with Phil Stroud officiating. Burial will be at Slater's Chapel Cemetery in Nolan, Texas, under the direction of McCoy Funeral Home. In lieu of flowers, please feel free to contribute to your favorite charity. Online condolences may be expressed at www.mccoyfh.com. Norma Job. Norma Zachary Job, 76, of Crestview, Florida, passed from this life on February 9, 2023. She was born on November 15, 1946, on a sunny West Texas day in Midland. She is now reunited with her beloved husband, Keith, and her parents, Norman and Vera Zachary. Those left to cherish her memory are her children, John Davis, Louise Davis, Mark Job, daughter-in-law, Rachel Davis, 8 grandchildren, siblings, Tommy and Jay Zachary, Mike and Denise Zachary, Jimmy and Lisa Zachary. A celebration of life for family and close friends will be held at 6 p.m. on Thursday, February 23rd at Ranchland Hills in Midland. Please respond for the celebration in order that your attendance is counted, or to place online condolences, visit www.daviswatkins.com. Arrangements are under the direction of David Watkins Crestview Memorial. Paul Foster. Paul H. Foster, 80, of Clyde, died Friday, February 17th in a Baird care center. Funeral services will be held at 1 p.m. Saturday, February 25th at Bailey Howard Funeral Home Chapel, with Chaplain Bruce Mercer officiating. Burial will follow in Ross Cemetery in Baird. Visitation will be from 6 to 8 p.m. Friday at the funeral home. Paul was born March 11, 1942, in White Plains, New York, to George and Edith Pindle Foster. He is survived by his wife of 45 years, Beverly Foster of Clyde, son Joe Don Foster of Corpus Christi, 2 daughters, Shelby Foster and Kelly Foster, both of Clyde, also 6 grandchildren, 4 great-granddaughters, and 1 great-great-grandson. Paul was preceded in death by his parents, his daughter Melinda Santana Raven Foster, sister Connie Miller, son-in-law Gene Morton, and his daughter Kelly's soulmate, Joe Havner. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests donation to the Upside Down Club of Abilene. Online condolences may be made at www.bailey-howardfuneralhome.com. Robert Allen. Robert Allen, age 95, of Midland, passed away on February 19th. Robert was born in Brookston, Texas, on April 16, 1927. Robert is survived by his wife of 71 years, Georgia, and 3 children, 13 grandchildren, and 18 great-grandchildren. A celebration of life will be held at Ellis Funeral Home on February 25th at 10:30 a.m. In lieu of flowers, the family asks for living plants to honor Robert and his love of gardening. Robert's family has a special relationship with Flowerama in Midland. Death Notices. Brett Herman. Brett Herman of Midland died January 15th in Midland. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home in Midland. Doyle Cliff Clifton Summers. Doyle Cliff Clifton Summers, 91, of Midland, passed away February 19th. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Leota V. Harley. Leota V. Harley, 92, of Midland, passed away on February 21st, surrounded by her family. Visitation will be held on Friday, February 24th, from 7 to 9 p.m. at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held on Saturday, February 25th, at 2 p.m. at Christ Church Anglican, with burial to follow at Rest Haven Cemetery. Pamela Bush. Pamela Bush of Odessa died December 29th in Odessa. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home. Ralph Bovey. Ralph Bovey of Midland died December 17th in Midland. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home. Sammy Nell Kreitz. Sammy Nell Kreitz of Midland died February 16th in Midland. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home.
This is Thoris with the Odessa American News for Wednesday, February the 22nd. The headline reads, Basin May Tap Texas Rainy Day Fund. The Texas Economic Stabilization or Rainy Day Fund is expected to reach its legal limit of $26.38 billion in 2025, and Odessa State Representative Brooks Landgraf wants to send the overflow back where it came from. The fund held $10.689 billion from state oil and natural gas severance taxes last August the 31st, and it's projected to end this fiscal year with a $13.716 billion balance. This year's cap is $20.3 billion based on the very complicated provisions of the 1989 state constitutional amendment that established the ESF. It can be easy to overlook those regions that are not home to major metropolitan areas because there are not as many votes there, and I think that has been the case historically, Landgraf told the Odessa American Monday from Austin. The legislature can now invest and impact the quality of life where people live, work, and raise families in the oil patch communities. This came in the form of addressing shortages in law enforcement personnel, nursing, skilled workforce, training, public education, colleges, healthcare institutions, transportation infrastructure, accounts used to clean up air and groundwater contamination, and property tax relief across the state. Every piece of my Texas strong severance tax revenue and oil and natural gas defense fund has a story behind it here in West Texas. Landgraf said the legislation would send hundreds of millions of dollars each year to the 39 counties it would designate, including Ward, Winkler, Loving, and Ector counties in his 81st district. Through the end of last year, he also represented Andrews County. When Langford filled the House Bill of 2207 and House Joint Resolution 111 in the current legislative session to create the fund, the Republican chairman of the House Environmental Regulation Committee said a number of House members called wanting to co-sponsor it, even some whose districts lie outside the oil and gas-producing counties, that it would primarily benefit. They understand that the communities in the epicenter of energy production need to have a certain standard of living because when Texas takes care of the oil patch takes care of Texas, Landgraf said. He explained that HB 2207 needs majority approval in the House and Senate and the governor's signature, while HJR 111 requires two-thirds approval in both houses to be placed on the November 7th ballot as a proposed constitutional amendment. There's a great deal of interest in investing in the parts of Texas that have made it so exceptional, Landgraf said. Visiting with thousands of my District 81 constituents over the past 12 months, I learned that they wanted me to work on the items included in this proposal. We need to take advantage of the opportunities before us and do everything we can for the good of Texas. Landgraf said the state's key energy-producing counties, most of them in the Permian Basin, last year generated 90% or more than $9 billion in severance tax revenues. Since 2014, he said, the same 32 counties have accounted for 80% of collections for a total of just under $40 billion. Texas's shortage of mental health care professionals is getting worse. In 2016, the warnings about the future of the Texas mental health care workforce were clear. More than 80% of Texas counties are designated as mental health professional storage areas, which are defined as more than 30,000 residents per clinician. The Texas Statewide Behavioral Health Strategic Plan stated 7 years ago, many of the most experienced and skilled practitioners are approaching retirement. Texas higher education institutions have been unable to produce enough graduates to meet the predicted demand. But no forecaster predicted a global pandemic that sparked months of lockdowns and restrictions on public life that left both Texas and a nation seeking to counter the resulting anxiety and depression. In a nation where agreement can seem rare, both Republicans and Democrats have come to the same conclusion. Mental health services are in direct need of a makeover and expansion. With the ongoing mental health challenges brought on by COVID-19, there could not be a more critical time to strengthen our nation's mental health resources, U.S. Senator John Corian, Republican of Texas, said in November 2020. Mental health affects all of us, President Joe Biden said last fall after announcing millions of dollars in new funding for state mental health services. The calls resurged in Texas after a teen school shooter murdered 19 children and two adults in the Uvalde last summer. We must provide mental health services to students who need it, Governor Greg Abbott said in his inaugural address last month. Texas House Speaker Dave Fenlon is calling for a more than $100 million school safety and mental health package, with nearly half of that package earmarked for children's mental health services. Millions of dollars are expected to be poured into a variety of services for all Texans. Texas ranks dead last when it comes to access to children's mental health services and 33rd for adult care, according to Mental Health America, a nonprofit advocacy group. The state has a lot of work to do first to increase the number of professionals it will take to deliver those planned new services. Today, 98% of Texas's 254 counties were wholly or partially designated by the federal government as mental health professional shortage areas. How this happened, quote, we never kept up with the demand, really, said Dr. Sarah Martin, a psychiatrist and medical director of the Texas Child Mental Health Care Consortium. The pandemic just dropped the stigma around mental health to the floor, and it happened so rapidly that lines or waiting lists for therapists are really long. That's not surprising to any Texan who has tried to get an appointment with a mental health care provider in the past 3 years, where wait lists can go beyond 6 or 7 months. Some therapists have had to stop taking new appointments altogether as demands for services have begun to overwhelm the system. The pandemic exacerbated existing shortages in behavioral health clinicians at every level of the mental health continuum, including our state hospitals, private psychiatric hospitals, and our local mental health authorities. Michelle Aleto, Chief Program and Service Officer for Texas Health and Human Services, told the House Appropriations Committee earlier this week. The workforce issues reach the highest levels of the mental health system. Texas currently can't use over 700 of its 2,911 funded state psychiatric hospital beds due to workforce shortages, said officials with Texas Health and Human Services. As of December 31st, state hospitals had 5,987 full-time employees, a drop from the 7,409 full-time employees in 2019. A shortage of therapists, psychiatrists, and psychologists also impacts other government agencies. Several county jails, including those in Dallas and Houston, have reported long waits for people with mental illnesses who are arrested and need treatment before trial. Earlier this year, more than 2,000 people in Texas jails and prisons were waiting for a bed in the state hospital system. And the workforce shortage is expected to worsen as many therapists, psychologists, and psychiatrists head toward retirement. Texas agency officials say there's not enough new graduates and younger professionals coming out of the colleges and universities to replace them. The Texas Behavioral Health Executive Council oversees mental health licensing for marriage and family therapists, professional counselors, psychologists, and social workers. The council saw a small increase last year in the total number of licensed professionals, 80,546 licenses, with 75,327 of those license holders considered active. 2 years ago, there were 74,890 license holders, with 69,729 of those considered active. Daryl Spinks, executive director of the council, said despite this growth, the industry is getting completely overwhelmed by the demand. He said Texas licensing requires applicants to participate in internships and complete a certain amount of time with a supervisor before being allowed to work on their own. We don't have enough people coming out through the door to meet those who are coming out. The state is also dealing with a dwindling supply of providers who are willing to train graduates seeking their licenses. This hesitation stems partially from fears of liability. So training programs can't pump out enough individuals, and once we get one out, we don't have enough internship sites or postdoc sites, Spinks said. This further limits the number of people who can get fully licensed to be a mental health provider. Multiple bills are on the docket this legislative session, meant to address some of the concerns of an overburdened mental health workforce. House Bill 1211 and House Bill 1551 are both measures that would offer loan repayment assistance if a mental health provider met certain requirements. House Bill 2361, to request a waiver and hire a licensed master social worker if the district is unable to fill an open position for a non-physician mental health professional due to a shortage of qualified applicants. While these bills and many more will attempt to solve the workforce shortage, there's also the issue of burnout experienced by those already in the mental health field. The job itself is demanding. Nobody comes into your office having a good day, Spinks said. Workforce stress and burnout, Victoria Alicia Torres, a first-generation college student from Houston, has always been fascinated by mental health. But during the pandemic, she contemplated leaving the field. It was physically and emotionally exhausting, and there were times when I felt very overwhelmed and overextended, she said. She said her growing in-person caseload as a graduate student during the pandemic became too much at times. It really made me stop and think about whether this was the work I would want to do if I were to get really ill from interacting with others, she said. While Torres was able to find the motivation to continue, that's not always the case. Any healthcare provider should be seeking their own wellness and getting their own needs met. It's like when you're on an airplane. You have to put on your own oxygen mask before helping someone else, said Dr. Jeffrey Kahn, a psychiatrist and mental director for the Baylor Psychiatry Clinic in Houston. There's also the added financial burden and the current contentious political climate that mental health providers say are contributing to burnout among professionals. I think that in Texas and some other states, it's kind of scary. The landscape is kind of scary. What is okay and what is not okay to say during a session, said Dorothy Garza, Senior Director of Mental Health Services at Communities in Schools of Central Texas, the largest provider of school-based behavioral health services for students in Texas. What is my wheelhouse to address with my clients, and what legalities might be in play? Another key stressor for providers in Texas is payment. Low-income individuals who qualify for Medicaid, the nation's taxpayer-supported health care provider, have some of the lowest paid per-session reimbursement rates. The same is true of private insurance. That's led many health providers to switch to a cash-only model. You aren't going to go into the profession if you can't make money off of it. Everyone in the industry has a servant's heart, but you don't want to be destitute, Spike said. Christy Mitchell, a project manager for communities in schools at Jane Langford Elementary School in Southeast Austin, said she can't blame people who make the decision to leave the profession. So much of the field is built on goodwill and maybe self-sacrifice, and that can be difficult to do continuously, Mitchell said. Not only are more providers needed, but there's also a growing demographic imbalance when it comes to the geographic distribution of mental health workers in Texas, a state where about 40% of residents are Hispanic, 39% are white, 12% are black, and 5% are Asian. Yet a state survey done this year revealed that most of the 2,873 respondents, some 85%, identified as white. The survey also stated only 20% of the respondents offered mental health services in a language other than English. And more than half of mental health care providers are located in urban areas such as Harris, Dallas, Tarrant, Bexar, and Travis counties. In the end, a bigger recruiting push and a better overall state strategy is needed, industry professionals say. We need to recruit and actively seek out those from underserved communities that might want to return home, said Khan. Mitchell agreed, we need them in the field. We need more people of color. We need more service providers with the experiences that our clients have had to deal with as well, she said. Pfluger announces the 2023 Congressional Art Competition. The Office of Congressman August Pfluger is now accepting submissions for the 2023 Congressional Art Competition. The competition is open to all high school students in the 11th Congressional District of Texas and is an opportunity for local artists to be recognized for their talents among artists from around the nation. The deadline is Monday, May 1, 2023. Students can register and upload images of their artwork on Pfluger's website at tinyurl.com/TX11Art. The winning student's artwork will be displayed in the Canyon Tunnel of the U.S. Capitol for 1 year. The art will be unveiled in a congressional reception in Washington, D.C. in late June. Winners and one guest are invited to the unveiling. Additional prizes may be announced. Artwork must be two-dimensional and original in concept, design, and execution. Art must follow the themes of Texas energy, Texas agriculture, American patriotism, a news release said. Dimensions of the artwork can be no larger than 26 inches high, 26 inches wide, and 4 inches deep. Accepted mediums for the two-dimensional artwork are as follows: paintings, oil, acrylics, watercolor, etc. Drawings, colored pencil, pencil, ink, marker, pastels, and charcoal. It is recommended that charcoal and pastel drawings be fixed. Collages must be two-dimensional. Prints, lithographs, silkscreen block prints, mixed media, use of more than two mediums such as pencil, ink, watercolor, etc., computer-generated art, and photographs. Students are highly encouraged to review the competition's complete rules and regulations on Congressman Pfluger's website. For more information, please visit tinyurl.com/TX11Art or contact Kasia David in the Killigan office at Kasia. CCFCU partners with UTBP for inaugural career fashion show. Gallatin's themed show prepared students for job interviews and career readiness. The University of Texas of the Permian Basin students receive financial tips on selecting an affordable outfit for interviews and interview advice from Complex Community Federal Credit Union during CCFCU's first career fashion show. The event was held on February 16th at the UTBP Multipurpose Room in Mesa Building. Students were served lunch, gifted door prizes, and a chance to win a $500 scholarship. Students learned about common mistakes made during interviews and how to dress for success on a budget. These are tips no one tells you. We normally learn by mistake. We wanted the students to be able to understand how to not make the mistakes that we made early in our careers and to know how to present their best selves at an interview, stated Stephanie Griffin, UTBP Program Coordinator for International Student Services, Financial Literacy and Foster Care Liaison. CCFCU is proud to promote financial capabilities in the community to equip individuals for opportunities in life. The credit union has been active in the local school districts, teaching financial capabilities to students and regularly hosts events to prepare students for success through career readiness and financial capabilities. The event concluded with the announcement of the $500 scholarship. TXOGA statement in support of legislation protecting energy choice. Todd Staples, president of the Texas Oil and Gas Association, issued the following statement Tuesday in support of SB 1017, filed by Senator Brian Birdwell, and HB 2374, filed by Representative Brooks Landgraft. Oil and natural gas are irreplaceable in making our modern lives not only possible, but undeniably better, Staples said in the press release. Misguided attempts to ban the use of particular types of engines or even specific fuel sources only serve to disrupt the lives of consumers and business owners who rely on affordable, reliable energy sources. TXOGA thanks Senator Birdwell and Representative Langford for filing this important legislation, and we look forward to our continued work with the legislature to protect energy choice. This legislation would protect energy choice by preventing political subdivisions from adopting or enforcing ordinances, orders, regulations, or similar measures which would limit access to specific sources or prohibit the sale of engines based on their fuel source. Oil and natural gas are an essential part of meeting the energy needs of both our state and nation, Birdwell said in the press release. California-style restrictions on engines or fuel sources that limit consumers and business owners from being able to access the energy sources they need have no place in Texas. As Texans, we are deeply aware of the importance of oil and natural gas in our lives, Landgraf said in the press release. This legislation will ensure that Texans are free to make their own choices without interference from government, and I am proud to fight to protect energy choice. 8 billion reasons to legalize gambling, sports betting in Texas. The point, it's time for Texas to join the 36 states and the District of Columbia that allow sports betting. Just about every day of the week, high-stakes Texas gamblers from Houston, Dallas-Fort Worth, Austin, and Midland-Odessa, and other Texas cities board nonstop flights to Las Vegas for free. The casinos pick up the tab, not only for the flight, but also for rooms, meals, drinks, and incidentals. All the gambler has to do is agree to buy a certain amount of chips and put them into play. Former Texas Monthly editor Greg Curtis, writing about this phenomenon years ago, suggested that the casino saw these bettors as a good bet for two reasons. Texans like to gamble, and they are bad gamblers. The high rollers aren't the only ones, of course. Thousands of Texans pay their own way to Sin City for the pleasure of losing money on slots, blackjack, poker, baccarat, craps, roulette, and other games of chance. About the only thing that actually stays in Vegas is their money. Texans drive to New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Mississippi to gamble in casinos, not to mention Texas-based casinos run by the three federally recognized Native American tribes in the state. Busloads of senior citizens from Houston and elsewhere head to Lake Charles, Louisiana, to feed their retirement money into slot machines. Countless Texans stop off at the stop and go after work and pick up a lottery ticket while paying for their bread and milk at the counter. Oh, and don't forget the office pool. March Madness is only a few weeks away. So, bad gamblers we may be, but there's no doubt we enjoy our gambling ineptitude. We've been gambling at least since a failed congressman named David Crockett bet the Tennessee farm on a new beginning in Texas. Three quarters of a century later, oil man Anthony Lucas bet on a nondescript salt dome south of Beaumont. Spindletop was the result. More recently, a freshman pre-med student from Houston, working on computers in his UT Austin dorm room, bet his medical future on selling PCs directly. Needless to say, Michael Dell hit it big. So here's the perplexing question. If gambling is in our Texas blood, why do we tolerate some of the strictest gambling laws in the country? The answer, one gambling lobbyist told us, is not only Texas-side hypocrisy. When it comes to social issues, he said, we're awfully slow to change. He mentioned liquor by the drink. Most states allowed restaurants and other establishments to begin serving liquor by the drink shortly after the repeal of Prohibition. Texans still had to join clubs for the privilege until 1971. Again, this legislative session, we have an opportunity to end the charade, and well, we should. Revenue was key to the gambling argument during the last session, when lawmakers gathered under the cloud of a pandemic-affected economy. With state coffers overflowing this session, the need for additional revenue is less urgent. Nevertheless, powerful gaming interests still have their money on Texas, as they have for the past couple of decades. In the wake of millions of dollars in campaign contributions during the 2022 election season, more 200 gambling lobbyists have descended on Austin. Here's why, as Chronicle sports writer Brian T. Smith noted in a column last week. The Texas Sports Betting Alliance, relying on a report from Eilers and Krejcik Gaming, estimates that more than $8 billion is illegally bet in Texas annually. If legislation is approved, Texas could become the largest legal sports betting market in the United States. This session, State Senator Carol Alvarado, a Houston Democrat, has filed Senate Joint Resolution 17, legislation that would give voters a chance to allow high-end resort-style casinos in a limited number of metropolitan areas, including one in the Houston area, and to authorize sports wagering. I'm excited about it, Alvarado told Smith. I've been filing some version of this since 2009, and I've been very patient, and I'm going to continue to be patient because I think it's inevitable. Eventually, it's going to happen. Capitol observers this session say the lieutenant governor may be coming around to mobile sports betting. Governor Greg Abbott seems amenable, while his predecessor, former Governor Rick Perry, has signed on as a lobbyist. House Speaker Dade Phelan, Republican from Beaumont, also is receptive. Passage of legislation to legalize gambling doesn't mean that Texans can immediately pick up their phones and start laying down legal bets. Legalization requires a constitutional amendment, which means legislation would need two-thirds support in the 31-member Senate and 150-member House before the proposal goes to voters in a November election. Texans deserve that opportunity. 36 states and the District of Columbia allow sports betting. Even more states allow casinos. It's time for Texas to join their ranks.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.